Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
In the beginning of the Tochacha, the Pasuk describes very clearly not only what will happen if the Jewish nation does what's inappropriate, but on the flip side, the Torah is very clear that if we do what's appropriate and we follow Hashem's ways, there'll be a tremendous, tremendous bracha. The Jewish nation will have fantastic success commercially, financially, as a nation. There'll be shalom, there'll be peace. You'll have astounding success in your individual life. And specifically as an Am, we'll have a very, very grand and opportune success. The Pasuk is very descriptive when it says what will happen. Not only will your fruits be multiplied, but there'll be success in every war situation. And the Pasuk says, "Radfu mechem chamisha mea, five of you will chase 100, mea mechem revova, 100 of you will chase 10,000, yirdufu, v'naflo evechem lifnechem l'chorev, and your enemies will fall in front of you in sword." The Pasuk is very clear that you're going to have supernatural success. Not only are you going to win wars, but the wars will be an astounding, in terms of the odds, they'll be astounding. Five of you will be able to chase 100, and 100 of you will be able to chase down 10,000, because that is the success that you will have. Now Rashi makes a note that the ratio, the math, is slightly off. Because if the Torah is telling us that five of you will be able to chase 100, then the multiple would be 100 of you would chase 2,000. Because the ratio of 5 to 100 ends up being 100 to 2,000. Yet the Pasuk says that five of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, five times the multiple on the first side. And Rashi says, as a question, v'kikachu acheshben, is that the equation? Is that the math? Really, it should have said 100 of you should chase 2,000. Rather, says Rashi, the answer is, ein adom mu'atim o'osim es haTorah. There's no comparison between a few doing the Torah, the murabim osim es haTorah, to many doing the Torah. Meaning, correct, the ratio is off. It should be 5 to 100, and then 100 to 2,000. But we're being taught a very significant lesson here, and that lesson is that five is a group, but there's no comparison between a large group keeping the Torah to a small group. When five people go out, that's a group, that's small, they'll have astounding success. They'll have l'mala m'derech hateva, well above normal nature, but it's 5 to 100. Once you get a larger group, once you get a significant number, 100, then your success is going to be multiplied five times, because then you're not going to be able to chase 2,000, you're now going to chase 10,000, because there's no comparison between a small group keeping the Torah as to a large group. And that's what Rashi says is pshat in the Pasuk. The only problem with this is that l'chora doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. We know that typically the Siyatra Shemaya, the amount of divine intervention, the amount of success that Hashem grants a person, is directly dependent on his intention and his madrega, his personal level. Now these five people who are running out to chase 100 enemies clearly are on a very high madrega in terms of betochen. For five people to chase down 100 is a high level of trusting in Hashem. And whatever madrega they're on the same madrega as the 100. So the five are going out with mesirish nefesh, with dedication to serve Hashem, the same as the 100 are. There's no difference in their personal level. So why is it that 100 should have five times the success rate as do the five? Granted, it's a larger group, but their same intention is there, the same madrega. There doesn't seem to be any difference that makes a difference. So the question is, what's the system that explains why, in fact, the murabim, the tzibur, the larger group doing the Torah has a greater effect? According to the regular systems that we're familiar with, it doesn't make sense. They should have the same effect, and they should not have greater effect. And that's a question I'd like to see if we can answer in this Rashi. And let me begin with what I think one might be tempted to say. One might be tempted to assume that the difference between a small group keeping the Torah and a large group keeping the Torah is a sense of motivation, having the crowd with me, having a group mentality that bolsters my sense of the likelihood of success. Now, the reality is that a winning attitude and a positive attitude is a key for success in any endeavor in life. And anytime you find a successful individual or a successful person, you will find that winning attitude. there's an interesting example that's been mentioned in other shmooz, and that is on February 19th in 1519, Cortez, who was a Spanish conqueror, set sail to Mexico. Now, Mexico at the time was populated by the Aztec Indians. The Aztec were a fighting entity, powerful race. And the interesting part about Cortez's attempt to win out the Aztec Empire was that he landed with a force of 600 men and 20 horses against the entire Aztec civilization. When he landed, the first thing that he did was he instructed his generals to burn the boats. And that's what they did. They went to the harbor and burnt the boats. When his men saw that their one method of escape, their boats were now burnt, they understood it's either victory or death, but retreat was no longer in the equation. And at that point, Cortez went on to conquer the Aztec Empire. He ended up ruling almost the entire Mexico, ruling over a civilization of some 5 million people. But that sense of determination, that sense of we must succeed because if not, we're going to die, was accomplished by burning his boats. And there are many times in life when a person sets his goals to succeed, when he has to literally burn his boats. There are many times if a person wants to succeed in any endeavor, he has to set himself a course and burn his bridges behind him, knowing full well that there is no retreat. Because that adrenaline flow, that sense of excitement, that sense of passion that comes from knowing that it's a do or die situation, oftentimes makes the difference, spells the difference between success or failure, and oftentimes is one of the key ingredients for a person to be successful. And the reality is that one might argue that that's a shot here in Rashi and might be argue it's a functional part. Now, we mentioned before in Shmuz, in a different Shmuz, a certain fact that this concept of winning attitude is something that is shows itself in very, very surprising situations. Ironically, in professional sports, this seems to be an edge factor. Now, keep in mind the fact that in professional sports, winning is where it's at. Winning is all that matters. And there are millions and millions of dollars spent on getting the edge, because the difference between winning and losing, again, spells the difference between success and failure, to the extent that the team either will be a moneymaker or a money loser based on their success. That being said, if you ask any professional in any culture, in any sport, what is the one edge that works all the time, everyone agrees that something called the home court advantage. And interestingly enough, they've done studies and they found that in professional sports, in football, for instance, 60% of the games are won on home court. In basketball and ice hockey, it's up to 64% of the games are won with a home court advantage. And in soccer, which is arguably one of the most competitive sports internationally, studies show that as much as 69% of the games are won on the home court. And clearly, this concept called home court advantage works. Now, the question is why? The question is specifically when you're dealing with professional athletes who make their living based on winning and losing. They're trained, they live their game, they're very, very into that game, and they're very, very talented. What difference does it make whether the crowd is booing or cheering? But not only that, here's another level to the question. Imagine that you're on the Super Bowl team, and you're playing, for argument's sake, away from your home court. You're playing on the opposing team's field. And you hear 100,000 people booing. But you know fully well that in your hometown, everyone, including your family, your friends, your entire town, maybe the entire city, are cheering you on. There are 200 million people watching this game. What difference does it make to you that there are 100,000 people booing? You know, all of your fans are rooting for you. The answer to that is the human. The human being is such that we're greatly influenced by other people, we're greatly influenced by crowds. When people cheer us on, we're encouraged and we have a sense of enthusiasm and a sense of success. When people boo us, we have a sense of failure, and that will spell the difference between success or not, strictly because it's motivational, strictly because with that energy that I get from the crowd, I'll go on to win. That's why Cortez burnt his boats. That's why professional sports teams need to play at home. And one might be tempted to say, that's Pshat Rashi. Look, five is a small group. 100 is a much larger entity. Look at that. They're cheering each other on. They're rooting for each other. There's a powerful crowd psychology. There's a mentality. Maybe that's the difference between 5 and 100. But the Guru Arya says that can't be pshat. Why? Because it makes a very simple observation. If the 5 Jews are now increased to 100, look on the other side of the equation. The 5 only had to face 100. The 100 are now facing 10,000. If it's psychology, if it's crowd mentality, the goyim that they're fighting have a much, much greater infusion of energy. They're super psyched because they have 10,000 people cheering each other on. If it's strictly a psychological ploy because you have people on your side, so surely the equation should be the exact opposite. And says the Guru Arya, that's not Pshat and Rashi at all. This has nothing to do with mentality, nothing to do with a winning attitude. It has nothing whatsoever to do with one's thought process. And rather, it's a wholly different system. And I'll share with you what I think that is. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, it says as follows. There's a stir in Psukim. One pasuk says, Mi Kashem Elokeinu M'chol Karenu, who is like Hashem, who's always accessible. Anytime a Jew needs, he just reaches out and Hashem is available, Hashem is there. And yet there's a contradiction, because the pasuk also says, Dirshu Hashem, seek Hashem bihi motzo, when He is available, when He can be found. Now, either Hashem is always accessible, or He's found at times, but it certainly seems to be a contradiction. Says the Gemara, there's no contradiction. Kan biyochid, kan b'tzibur. One is to a private individual, the other is to a tzibur. Says the Gemara, during the 10 days between the Aser Shemei Tshuva, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Hashem is always available, always accessible, even to the yochid. What that means is, you could feel Hashem's presence to a greater extent. You could feel Hashem right there. It's easier to relate to Hashem. It's easier to feel Hashem during that time period than it is any other time of the year. And to be honest with you, it's something I've often felt. Come Cheshvan time, I usually have this feeling of shucks, blew it. Meaning, we all try to use the days of Elul properly, and certainly the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah properly, and sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. But the bottom line is, it's much easier to feel Hashem's presence, it's much easier to daven with kavanah, it's much easier to understand that I'm standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And oftentimes I find myself in Cheshvan saying, shucks, because then it's much harder, and then I realize I didn't use the opportunity properly. But there is a reality. The reality is that during the course of the year, it's difficult to feel Hashem's presence, it's difficult to feel the Yira. During Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, it's much more easy to feel it. And what the Gemara is telling us is that that same accomplishment can be brought about with another device called a tzibur. Davening with a minyan, getting together 10 people, can accomplish the same thing of propelling your tefillahs, making them more potent, because you're davening with a tzibur. And the question is, what's pshat? Why is it, how does it function, that 10 will change it? Because after all said and done, Hashem is not available. Hashem is kavyochol distant. And tzibur may be nice, but at the end of the day, it's not the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. Hashem is not right there. And the question is, how does it function? So I think this yesod is a very interesting yesod, and that is, when Hashem created the world, Hashem created immutable laws of nature. Gases tend to expand, heavy objects fall, objects in motion tend to stay in motion. There's certain governing principles with which Hashem created nature, and these are rules, relationships, things that deal with all of the physical worlds that we deal with. Just like Hashem created governing principles to the physical world, Hashem created similar systems of order to the upper worlds, to spiritual worlds. In the physical world, there's an entity called a lever. Now, a lever is something that allows me to impact, cause motion, cause effect well beyond my power. Now, if you want to see a muscle of a lever in day-to-day life, one of the most successful Jewish businessmen in our day and age was a fellow called Howard Jonas. Now, Howard Jonas, the founder of IDT, if you read in his book, he mentions the fact that during various tkufas, during various times of his career, he didn't have an office in IDT. Basically, he would come into the building and sit with his executive team and discuss things. He would spend his day meeting with the different department heads, but he didn't actually have an office because there was no work for him to do in that sense. He just worked with his department heads. Now, that's an interesting thing to think about, and I'll share with you why. Imagine for a minute that I come up with a great business chop. Here's my great idea. I'm going to buy widgets at 50 cents and sell them for a dollar. pure profit, 100% markup. It's great. And I go out there and do my thing. Now, even if assuming that it is a clever idea, and even assuming that it makes sense, here's the difficulty. I am one human being. How many widgets can I buy at 50 cents and sell for a dollar? At the end of the day, there's a great limitation, and that is I can only speak to so many people, I can only sell so many widgets, so I'm only going to make so much money. But Howard Jonas is in a bit of a different position because he has hundreds, if not thousands of employees. He sits atop a $2 billion company, and he has a huge amount of leverage. When he comes up with a chop, when he comes up with a novel approach, a new strategy, he's not just a human being out there selling widgets. It's an entire edifice, an entire complex, an entire empire that's out there doing it. And the result of that is fantastic, fantastic success. What he's doing is he's leveraging his own power, his own ability to change things. He's multiplying it by hundreds, if not thousands, because he's moving a huge operation. And this concept called leverage is that something that allows me, a small person, a weak individual, to accomplish great things well beyond my capacity. My daughter just got her license. Now, Baruch Hashem, she's a girl and not a boy, so I didn't have dread and trepidation, but there is a lot of thinking that a parent does when they see their daughter or son driving on their own for the first time. And the reality is, it's a scary thought. It's 5,000 pounds of steel that moves at 60, 70 miles an hour, hurdles across the highway. And the consequences are pretty grave, but that's the point. You see, it's a very small little gas pedal, and it's a very little pressure that it takes to push down the gas pedal. But that little pressure is multiplied thousands upon thousands of times. It's leveraged into a vehicle moving very, very quickly. And this concept of leverage, taking a small force and multiplying it by using a vehicle, by using a medium, by using a system, is, I think, something that the Gemara shares with us. You see, when 10 Jews joined together in a minyan, what they've done is they've created a lever. They've created a machine. This machine will now impact and have a greater potency than 10 individuals. It's now a lever. It's now a machine that can change decrees, that could change the way Hashem views things, that can change their destiny. But the results aren't then split up amongst 10. Each yachid in the tzibur gets the effect of the tzibur. The minyan, the group of 10 that is now an entity, that is now a lever, accomplishes what it sets out to accomplish, and each of the individuals in the group are now the beneficiaries of those accomplishments. They're using a lever, they're using a machine that will radically change and accomplish far more than each one of them individually could, and I believe that that's exactly Pshan Rashi. When five people go out, they went b'mesiris nefesh, willing to risk their life with bitochon, trusting in Hashem, and it's a great thing. But there's no comparison between a small group keeping the Torah to a large group. 100 reaches a certain power, a certain level, a certain platitude, where at that point, they're now ready to be a tzibur, and at that point, they're a lever, they're a machine that will accomplish far more than the entire individuals would do ever alone, and that can accomplish something that's not just ratio-wise the same as the five. As a matter of fact, it's five times more potent, because that is a koch of tzibur. It's one of the immutable laws of nature. It's one of the governing principles with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. He made levers, he made machines. And one of the machines that Hashem created is the koch of tzibur. A group of Jews gathered together as a unit, as a group, has a power far more impactful, far more powerful than any of the individuals ever could, because that's the way Hashem created the world. And I believe that that's exactly what Rashi is saying. The 100 are five times more potent, because they're utilizing the system called a tzibur. Now, the reason why I think this is significant is because there's a lot for us to take from it. First of all, if we don't even get too far, just a very simple observation, and that is the next time you're tempted to take your tefillin to work and daven whenever you may daven, which might even be 1 o'clock, or even if it's 8:30, if you think about the following concept, davening with a minyan will allow me to be more effective. And what that means in plain simple terms is, I have a lot of things to do during my day. I have a lot of things I want to accomplish, many things that I wish will happen, and I will multiply my effectiveness as a human being by making sure that I'm with the minyan. Now, why is it? I may have more kavan at home. I'm not distracted by other people. I may even be more into my davening. The answer is, there's a machine. There's a lever. There's a system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created called a tzibur, called a minyan. If you daven with a minyan, it's much, much more potent, much more powerful, even if you don't understand it. Even if it's not related at all to anything psychological, even if you don't get into the davening more, you're using a lever, you're using a machine, hence it works much better, and it's more effective. And that's a concept that I think bears mentioning and bears thinking about, because like everything in life, it requires chizuk. But I think there's a much bigger picture here and a much bigger issue that I think requires addressing. Ask the average guy, certainly a working guy, where did you daven last Friday night? Likely he'll tell you, oh, I davened such and such place. Fine. Where'd you daven last Shabbos afternoon? He'll also tell you, well, I davened at such and such place, but likely not the same place you davened Friday night. And where'd you daven Mincha? Now there'll be a third place, but again, not one of the other two. Now ask the same fellow, okay, good. Tell me about the week before that Shabbos, the Shabbos before that Shabbos. Also davened three places, but likely also not the same three places that he davened the week before. Interesting observation. Many people do the shul hop. Down here Friday night, here Shabbos afternoon, here Mincha, and it's fine because there are plenty of shuls, plenty of shtibles, and why not? Why not just get around and be more of a mabrius and meet everybody in different people in different ways? Amazingly, there's something dramatically lacking in our Jewish life. We have reached a point where Torah flourishes tremendously. Yeshivas on every street corner, shuls, bati midrashim, it's unending, the availability. And amazingly, despite the amount and the proliferation of tremendous mostos, there's no community. There's no sense of community. There is no community. People don't have shuls that they belong to. They don't have a makom. They don't have a place. They're out there alone. And the concept of a tzibur, the concept of this is my shul, this is my group, this is my entity, is almost non-existent. And my friends, that is a chesaron. Because with that comes a lot of costs. Number one, as a human being, if you are alone, you are very, very weak. There's no support, there's no hope, there's nobody allowing you to grow, no one forcing you to grow, no one encouraging you to grow. You're out there alone. You know, it's a very interesting story. Rabbi Saul Salanta was once davening in shul, and at a certain point, he looks around, and he takes off his tefillin, runs out, grabs a hatchet and starts breaking down the door of a man's house. And it turned out that the man had passed out. He quickly called for somebody to help. In the end, they revived the person. And someone afterwards asked, what's shot? The hatchet, the running. And so it's simple. The man wasn't there for minyan. Clearly, he must have been sick. There must have been something going on. He wasn't there for the minyan. Meaning it was a regular part of the town. It was a large shul. It wasn't a little shtiebel. But there was a regular part of the town called the shul. Everyone davened there. And when a man wasn't there, it was so noticeable that Israel Salanta went out to grab an axe to break down the man's door because Rachman San, who knows what, he must be dying. You don't find that today in our shuls. You cannot be there for a year. You cannot be there for 10 years and no one's going to miss you because whatever. No one expects you to be there. But that's a tremendous chasara. That's a real problem. The lack of a community, the lack of joining together, the lack of groups is something that's dramatically lacking. My Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva, asked me many years ago to begin an organization to deal with this issue. Teferes Mei Torah, TBT, which is Yeshiva Programs for Working People, was an attempt to deal with this problem. Now, whether we'll ever be successful in a large national sense of dealing with it or not, the problem is real. And it's something that every Jew has to deal with. A Jew has to be a part of a tzibur. And what that means is it's not good enough to just daven with a minyan regularly. Even if you make every single minyan and you never miss. If you don't have a tzibur, if you don't have a congregation, you don't have a group, you're not part of that tzibur, you're missing out a dramatic, dramatic effect. Number one, you don't have chaverim, you don't have like-minded people supporting you, you're not on the same page with people working together, so you're alone. But number two, if you're not a tzibur, you're not getting one of the most powerful levers that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Granted, you're getting that particular minyan, that particular davening, but the concept of a tzibur, doing things together, whether it be learning Torah, being involved in inyoni chesed, whatever it may be, the concept of a tzibur is something that's potent, that's powerful, and it's something that's very, very essential for the success of the Jewish nation. Unfortunately, it's something that's lacking. I think this Rashi teaches us a very great yesod. There's no question that motivation, drive, enthusiasm is very, very key. And there's also no question that you will have a lot of that if you're part of a tzibur. When Cortez burnt the boats, it's because he understood with drive, with motivation, with an unending sense that I must accomplish this, a person can accomplish multiples of what he could have without it. That attitude, the winning attitude, the home court advantage is something that professional athletes recognize, and it's something that's a mitzvah in the human. If a person is not part of a tzibur, if he's not part of a congregation, not part of a shul, not part of a community, he is lacking a dramatic force in his life, that sense of being part of something, something that's going to help you even when you're down, something that's going to pull you up even when you're not super motivated, something that's going to give you that sense of belonging to a group that's growing will be lacking, and likely you will not be as successful. But I think Rashi is teaching us a whole other part of it, and that is in the equation of 5 to 100 and 100 to 10,000, there's no comparison. Nothing to do with psychological traits, nothing to do with emotionality, strictly to do with the effectiveness of the individual. Five people going by Mesiras Nefesh at the end of the day is not a large group. 100 people is a tzibur, and the effect of 100 people is five times as significant as the five, simply because it has a koach of tzibur. That's a leverage. When Howard Jonas operates his $2 billion company, he's leveraging thousands of people. Hence, he's multiplied many times out, much more effective. When you drive a car, it's a lever, it's a machine that accomplishes far more than you could, and so too when you're part of a tzibur. What you're doing is you're multiplying your own effect, you're multiplying dramatically what you're going to accomplish, and that only comes if you join, in fact, a tzibur, if you become part of it, and you work together with that. And I think this is a tremendous yesod that we need to focus on. I want to close with an interesting story that I was zochet to hear Rabbi Shmuel Blum, the executive vice president of Agudas Yisrael, tell over. He told over that this was a conversation that he had with Sharansky. Now, at the time that he had it was not long after Sharansky had been released from the Soviet prison systems. And basically, the conversation surrounded the following question: how did you survive? Now, keep in mind the fact that Sharansky was a Jew arrested in Russia for the crime of practicing Judaism. Keep in mind the fact that he was locked up in the Soviet torture system. And the question was, what gave you the strength, especially because Sharansky had very little Jewish education. There were very little, in terms of yeshivas, Torah knowledge, what gave you the strength? So he answered as follows. He said, when he was in jail, Sharansky says, he got the message that Jews throughout the world were praying for him, were demonstrating for him. They were on his side, and he said, that gave me the strength to continue. But he said that wasn't the end. When his wife brought him a Tehillim, and he began reading the words of Tehillim, he realized that this concept of Jews being isolated, Jews being oppressed, was not historically unprecedented. Quite the opposite, it was a part of history. And he recognized at that point that not only was he a part of a nation, he was a part of a nation with a very long history. He was part of something much, much bigger. He was part of the eternal people. And he said that concept gave him the ability to go on, gave him the will to continue, and that's what allowed him to eventually become the victor in this situation. And my friends, there's a certain reality. By dint of the fact that we are Jewish, we're members of a nation. We're members of this people, this eternal people. But the reality is that mitzvah can be multiplied dramatically if we gather together, chabura, chabura, community, community, if we join together as groups, create our own infrastructure, create our own communities, then the effect of that is multiplied many, many times. But being a part of a nation that's separate, mufuzer, that's not gathered together, weakens us dramatically. And it's something I think that bears understanding, bears focusing on. Rashi tells us it's a multiple. It multiplies your effectiveness, changes dramatically. But again, like many things in life, requires chizik. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow us the wisdom and understanding and allow us to bring this into bearing into our own lives.
Yeah. You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all the Shmoozin free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as Maaser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.